Hi, my name is Jamie Mackay and I head the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching Programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And this podcast is part of a series where I ask established arts educators about their practice. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be interviewing Tan Cheng Hung. Cheng is a teaching artist who has worked extensively in arts education and theatre. She has collaborated with students from kindergarten to university and enjoys mentoring them in the process of artistic creation. Cheng has worked on stage and backstage in professional and youth theatre as director, playwright, actor, trainer, producer and designer, and currently teaches literary arts in School of the Arts, Singapore. So could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Okay. My name is Tan Cheng Han. Most people call me Cheng, and I'm a teaching artist. My background has always been in theatre and creative writing. I've worked extensively on stage and backstage in professional and youth theatre. Had the privilege of working as a playwright, actor, director, producer, and designer in Singapore. And my mentor was the late William Teo. I was very lucky to have had a chance to work with him in my career. And I also work in creative writing, and that's actually mainly the area I work in now. I have a wide interest in many different art forms besides theater and creative writing. So visual arts, film, contemporary dance, interdisciplinary art making. I like to bring all of these into my writing classroom, you know, to give my students a wide range look at the creative process and in the pieces, the stories that they want to tell. Yeah. The other area that I'm interested in is arts pedagogy, curriculum development. I'm always looking for new ways to engage my students. Currently, I teach literary arts in School of the Arts Singapore, also known as SOTA. This is an IB school. In my faculty, the students learn different types of writing forms, prose, script writing, and poetry. And this is a six-year program. I've been in the school now for 5 years, and I work with students age 13 to 16.
Thank you very much. So when you're working with learners, what is your goal?
I think it's changed over the course of my career. I think as a very young teacher a few decades ago, it was the traditional way of looking at teaching, which was like transmitting information, teaching skills. I think over the years I've seen that, you know, when you use the word to teach, it seems to be a passive sort of like, I'm the teacher, here are the students, and you're giving information, teaching them skills. I think it's also partly because of my experience in theater, that collaborative nature of working on a theatrical production. So I, more and more in my writing classroom, I like to think of myself as a mentor to the teenagers that I work with, mentoring them in the process of artistic creation. I see the mentor as someone who plays many, many roles. And I'm inspired by the mentors that I've had as a theater practitioner and also as a student. So the mentor is someone who gives guidance, shares knowledge and experience. You know, you encourage the student when the student needs a boost in confidence and point out blind spots where needed. I suggest ways in which my students can step out of their comfort zone when I think they should and can do more. You know, I think more importantly, the idea that the student is someone to be respected. You take the time as a teacher, as a mentor, to understand the thinking behind a student's artistic creations. Why do they want to tell the story? What do they want to do? It's, for me, there's a huge correlation between the mentoring relationship and the hero's journey. The idea that the mentor can always see a part of you that you don't see yourself, the blind spot, that the mentor can see, oh, this is what this person is capable of, you know, and the person as a young person, as an emerging artist, and I've been there myself, Should I still think of myself as an emerging artist? The idea that you want to do this, but you may have the heart to do this, or you may lack the courage to do this. And the mentor is someone who knows how to draw this out of you in a nurturing and a respectful way. I find that's really important. The other goal I have when working with learners is involving them and collaborating with them to create their learning experiences, you know. Questions I ask myself that I've had also with colleagues in my current school and in other schools is, what happens to students when they learn in a way where they contribute to their own learning? What happens to the intrinsic motivation that they have? How does that kind of spark enthusiasm and engagement in what they're doing? I've also over time see myself not as the only resource in the classroom. I now see my students as a resource as well. You know, what are they reading? What are they watching? What issues are they interested in? In a recent experimenting with poetry module that we had in school in SOTA for my 16-year-old students, I suggested that this be an entirely not assessed module and mostly student-directed. So over the past 4 years, the students have encountered writing poetry in different ways. So for this year, we gave them 5 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks, for them to decide, you know, if you're experimenting with poetry, what areas do you want to do more research in? Which poets do you want to read? What types of poems, poetry writing, do you want to experiment with? How will you go about doing this? The feedback from the students was very, very encouraging because they said with the weight of assessment taken off them, they were free to take more creative risks. And most of these students prefer to write prose. So poetry is something that they're already not terribly excited about. But because they had free rein to go in whatever direction they wanted, they found directions like experimenting with text and photos, looking at specific forms of poetry that they have not encountered in class before, but they read about or heard about. So there was a lot more they wanted to do and could do. And some students also collaborated and wrote poems together, right? So that for me, kind of like cemented the idea that yes, right, shifting the focus onto the students in the classroom, giving them the chance to take ownership. I think it's really important.
So what barriers get in the way of achieving that goal then?
I think sometimes students get fixed in their own ways of thinking, and they don't know how to listen to feedback about their work. Or sometimes when you give them free rein, they're like, where do I even start? Right? You know? So this is when, as a teacher, you still have to step in and go, okay, right, so what are you interested in? Having a conversation. I feel it's taking the time to have a conversation and to understand each student, because not everyone's going to want to follow the same approach or learn in the same way or think in the same way, right? So going back to the mentoring relationship, it's a relationship you build over time. And ultimately, it's always a safe space for the student to think, create, write, edit, and reflect. Yeah, and I think finding an approach that works for that particular student. This is why I like to teach the same students for more than a year, if possible. It's a luxury. I've had the chance to do that in my current school, which is wonderful, because you have time to get to know them. And I think before even I learn their names, I always get to know them through the writing that they do, the voice that they have in the writing that they do. And over time, you know, I get a very clear sense of. And I always tell them, you know, if you after about 9 months of working with them, like if you gave me a piece of work and you blocked out all your names, I'd be able to say, this person wrote this and you wrote this. There's no way you could have written that. Because everyone has a distinctive voice. Yeah. So I think one of the barriers is when students are very fixed in their own ways, maybe they don't fully understand that the teacher and the student are on the same side. So they see us as, you know, you're in my way. I'm trying to do this. Can you please just let me do what I want? So it's helping them to understand, right, that I am not saying you can't write this, but I'm saying, why don't you try this instead? You might have an easier way. Sometimes students take on ideas and topics that are very, very important to them, but could be beyond what they're capable of exploring at that moment in time. Or it might be something that's too emotional and might trigger certain things. So sometimes having to tell them, if you did something else, like make it less complicated, but still in the same area, the same topic area, you'd have a more enjoyable time writing it. You wouldn't have to fight so much with yourself and with trying to wrangle this like octopus of an idea, you know, into something that fits or that makes sense. Yeah. I think also another barrier is my own impatience. Like I can see if an idea is not going to work out. And I want to save the students time and say, oh, try something else. I don't think this is going to work out. But I've also realized in time and with experience that I have to let them find out for themselves. I have to let them make the mistake, fall on their face, and then go in there and like, oh, okay, how can I help you now, right? You know, because they won't take my word for it, right? And just as if I think I'm in their position, I'll be like, no, I want to find out for myself too. Right. So it's exactly the same thing, to give them the space to figure it out. The other thing I think is really important, not really a barrier, but it's actually more of a strategy to help, is to teach students self-management skills. You know, someone always assumes, oh, they know how to take notes. Of course, in time, they'll know how to manage time. And yeah, of course, they can plan a schedule, but, you know, they don't. Right. If you think about a student who comes in from primary school to secondary school, which is where, when I start working with teenagers, you know, 13 years old, they've just gone from like little school to a big school, right? What one of my friend's daughters calls big person school. And they suddenly have so much more things to manage, more subjects to take. So, I mean, I would take the time out in class to teach them how to manage time. To show them how to make a schedule with realistic deadlines, you know, to show them, okay, right, you have a month, your calendar, this thing is due here, your short story is due on this date. Then you work backwards. What do you have to do? What are the milestones? And then, of course, you're not only writing this short story. In this month, you're also managing at least 6 to 7 different other things. And worlds will collide. What will you do when they do that, right? And then helping them to manage their expectations as well. Because in creative writing, we do workshopping where they bring drafts into class to get feedback, you know, and I've been there before in creative writing class where I'm the one bringing drafts in. And there's a huge pressure you put on yourself. Oh my God, this draft has to be amazing because the teacher is seeing it. My classmates are seeing it. So helping them to understand a work in progress cannot be perfect, cannot be always amazing. You know, don't stress yourself up in this way. And then something also as simple as how do you take notes? I don't think I was not taught how to take notes. I figured it out by myself when I was about 17, when in school, I finally had to start taking notes during lectures. So now I share the strategies and the ways I figured it out for how to take notes with my students. How do you listen, process? How do you use short forms? I think it's quite fun trying to figure out short forms that you use, you know? So these are all things I help them so they helps to manage their workflow. Yeah.
I'm pretty certain you've just answered this question about strategies. Yeah. What strategies do you use to help you achieve your goals or deal with the barriers? Are there any others? You've already given us quite a few strategies there in your response to the barriers.
I think other strategies that I have, it would be talking about pedagogy and just sharing sharing what I do in class with my colleagues, having a chance to talk to colleagues in my school, not just people in my own faculty, but people in different faculties, and talking to artists, writers outside of school, you know, talking about what they do. I think that's useful. Sometimes, the other thing that we do currently in SOTA is we invite writers to come in and do masterclasses and talks, right? So the writers could come in and say exactly the same thing that I would say in class, or somehow when someone new comes in, it's like, oh, wow, why have you never shared that with us? Right? So I think it's always good to see the art-making process from a different point of view. Even if the person is saying the same thing, I feel that's important as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Jing. How do you measure your success as an arts educator?
I think I feel I've been successful when I become redundant in the classroom, when the students don't need me anymore, you know. I feel my goal is slowly to make them more and more independent. Hopefully gain confidence, but then, you know, confidence, as we know, is something that comes and goes, right? You have it in spades one day, and then tomorrow morning you feel like, oh, I can't write anything, you know, I'm like, this is totally hopeless, right? So I think it's helping them to see that, yes, slowly, step by step, they can do this. I also love it when students surprise themselves, when they are able to do things that they never thought they were capable of. Or when they look back at the year and they think, wow, I did that. Because we have an online anthology that that I worked on for about 2 years now, where the students get it's a showcase for them, right? So, and writing is not a performative art. So it's not like theater or dance where you have a natural sort of showcase experience where here's a performance, let's watch you play a piece of music, let's watch you perform in a play, right? Whereas writing is something that the audience engages in on a different level. So we give the students ownership of the showcase by saying, you choose out of everything you've written this year, what do you want to show? What do you want to present as, this is my piece of work for this year on the showcase? And very early on, my colleagues and I, we decided that we were not going to do any editing to the content unless there was problems with language or age appropriateness. So we would let them, this is your piece of work, this is what you want to say, and just copy editing, proofreading, and then it goes up, right? So I feel that to get a student to a point where they feel, yes, I'm confident enough to put up a piece of work and send it out to the world and say, I'm now been published on the website, you know, I feel that would be one of the ways I would see that, yes, I've done my job today. You know, it's been a good day.
And how would you describe the ideal relationship between you and your learner?
I think the ideal relationship would be like what I talked about earlier, the mentor and the student. I think too, the ideal relationship is when I found a way in to help each learner in whatever way they feel they require. I also think that the mentor and student learner, the co-learner, I feel the learning goes both ways. The ideal relationship is when the learning goes both ways. When both myself and the student, we're both equally engaged. And I think I feel the learning that goes both ways is important. For me, it's building on what I know as an arts educator. I feel that there's limitless learning in this area. As long as there's enthusiasm or students, and there's always something that I can learn. I always think about how much more I know now compared to when I first started. Sometimes I feel kind of bad. I'm like, the people I taught when I first started out, you know, I was enthusiastic, but I didn't have as much knowledge or as much experience as I have now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so what job title are you most comfortable with?
Teaching artists. I first heard the words teaching artists in iTech 5 2 years ago when I first joined, when I first heard about iTech and I attended the conference. It instantly made sense to me because I'm a teacher. I'm also an artist. I'm like, why did I never think of putting these two words together? I also think that besides just being a teacher and an artist, I like to think that I bring artistry into how I teach. There's a level of imagination and creativity in the activities I design for my students. Teaching artists.
So what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
Generosity. Because there's no point knowing a lot if you don't share, right? And you're stingy about it. So I think about all the great teachers I've had and how generous they were with what they knew. And my theater mentor, William Teo, was one of the most generous people I know, just sharing contacts, sharing information, sharing knowledge, experience, and everything. So I feel that's very important, the going in with a sense of generosity. I think empathy is important to me. Is empathy a value? Is it a trait? empathy is important for a human being, for an artist in general, just helping me to understand my students' point of view. I mean, each year as I get older, the students get younger. So there's the, how do you get into the mindset of someone who is now so much younger than you. And often, sometimes the behavior you see on the surface, the possibly rebelliousness, possibly stubbornness, it's not really that. It's really about something else, right? Often insecurity they're not sure. I mean, I'm so glad I'm no longer a teenager because it's such a confusing, confusing, difficult time, right? So I feel the empathy is important. Yeah. I think integrity as well. Just a sense of respect, a clear sense of how you want to be treated and how you would treat other people. I feel that's really important.
This relates to your original response. If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
I think this is my favorite question. I thought about this a lot. In the end, I chose Ursula Le Guin. Because she's one of my favorite writers and she's got such an amazing body of work.
Could you spell her name, Dave? Could you spell her name for me?
Sure. Yeah. Ursula, U-R-S-U-L-A.
Yep.
And then Le, L-E.
Yep.
And Guin, G-U-I-N.
Great, yep.
Yeah, so thank she's... you. Yeah, you're welcome. So she's got an amazing body of work and I came to her work rather late, I think. I think I only started reading her probably about 8 years ago. And her most well-known series is called Earthsea. And she wrote this over decades. I think the first book she wrote in 1969 and the last book was written in the 2000s. And it was never intended to be a series, even though the characters recur. And of course, now everyone says, okay, this is the Earthsea cycle, this is the Earthsea series. She never intended to write it as a series. And I love that every novel is written from a different character's point of view. And you have female protagonists and male protagonists. And I've said this to a lot of my friends, and I tell everyone to read this. And I said that, and I reread this very, very, very often. I mean, I think once a year I read it. And there's a fantasy series, I could choose one fantasy series to read for the rest of my life, this would be it. Yeah, and she's I guess most well known as a fantasy and science fiction writer. She's also written poetry. She's written realist stories and novels. She's written essays. She's written essays. And she passed away, I think in 2018, she passed away. She was 88. She was in her late 80s. I love the fact that when she was in her 80s, she started a blog. I think that's so amazing. So she's endlessly inspiring. And when I reread her work, and then when I find, this is a book I haven't read yet, I will read this or her poetry. I feel that I will be uncovering things about her writing, you know, for many, many years to come. So she's the person I would pick. Yeah.
So if you could ask her one question, what would it be?
She's actually already helped me in this. This has got to do with my own writing and not as my work as an arts educator, even though it is related. So I stopped writing for a number of years, and I can't explain why I stopped. I just couldn't get started again. It was just a very dry spell, you know, for a number of years. And it was a difficult time for me because while I wasn't writing anything for anything on my own, every day I would walk into class and tell people how to, and show people, teach people how to write, you know? So it was this very, very, it was this very odd period in my life where I'm thinking, what am I doing? Why am I not doing any writing on my own? And it was something that, and it was, and reading something that she wrote in one of her essays helped me to deal with it, because she essentially said, if you're not writing, it means you don't have any stories to tell right now. That's so simple, right? And there is no need to feel any guilt about it, you know. When you have something to write, you will start to write again, you know. So when I read it, I'm like, that's so simple. Why couldn't I have figured that out? I guess because I was dealing with all the emotions of why are you not writing? So that helped me a lot. And recently I was able to share this very wise piece of advice with one of my students, when she was going through the same situation. And I said, let me share this piece of wisdom with you. I'm passing it on from someone who is way wiser than you and I together, you know? Yeah. So I feel that was, yeah. Yes.
So if you could ask her one question now, not knowing the answer, if today you could ask her one question, a new one.
A new one. Okay, so this also has to do with writing. Again, I found my way back to writing slowly this year. The past few years, I've slowly come back to it. And I'm working on a series of personal essays right now. And if I had to ask her something, I would ask her, you know, how do you find the story in the events of your life? Because what I have right now as a draft are events that happened, right? And it's just this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, right? And I feel that I have the events. I know these things happen because I was there when they happened. I don't have the story yet, you know? So I think my question to her would be, how would I find the story? How do I turn these events into my life, into the story that I want to tell? Yeah.
And what do you think she would answer?
This is very hard, Jamie.
I know.
This is very hard. Because this requires me to come up with an answer that I don't have right now. Yes. I think she would probably, she might say, which is like looking at it from a different point of view, just finding different ways. And again, going back to Earthsea, right? The first novel is about Ged, the main character, and he's a small boy. He grows up into a young adult, teenager. So that's the story there. And then in the second story, Ged becomes a supporting character. And the second novel starts with a brand new female character in a totally different part of the world that she's created. And she continues to do that in every single book. The third book, again, new protagonist. And Ged is always there as he ages. But he is never the central figure ever again like he was in the first one, you know? So maybe that's something that extrapolating from what she has done, it's to look at it from a different point of view. So instead of looking at myself as the center of the story, to look at it from different angles and see what comes out of it. You may have just helped me into a breakthrough with this thing that I'm stuck with. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Okay, finally, is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
I think that when I'm in the classroom, where I'm teaching a class, in a classroom in that sense, I feel I'm constantly a learner. I think I've been teaching for about, 28, 29 years. After a while, you just stop counting, you know? I think the only time I have to count it is when I'm updating my CV. And I'm like, okay, let's go through that again. And even after all this time, the classroom is still my favorite place to be. Because there's so much that goes on that feeds me on many different levels, where I can share and exchange ideas, where I can continue to learn. That keeps me going. I also think about the number of times when students have recommended books and authors to me, you know, and these would be books and authors that I probably would not have thought to go and look for, and who've now become, part of. And I return the favor by always sharing, okay, I read this, I think my friends should read this too. And I think whenever I invite a writer to do a masterclass with my students, or if I go and attend an event with writers, I'm always there soaking up all the stories that's going on and writing advice. You know, I think about the time 2 years ago where my students taught me origami. Right? We were sitting in class and they were teaching me how to fold cranes and butterflies and all kinds of things. And my ex-students, who are still in the same school in SOTA, started a writing group called Languini. I love that name. I love saying that, you know, the group is called Languini. and whenever I can, I join them and we write together, you know. And when I'm in that group, I'm not the teacher because they're running the group, you know. It's an activity, it's part of the IB program, and I'm very happy to supervise, but really they're doing most of the work. And it was lovely just to be in there and they set the writing exercises. So to me, it's like joining them to write together, you know, and then we talk and we share experiences. This year also, when I'm teaching a class, if I give students writing to do, right, whenever I can, if I'm not setting up the next activity or doing something else, I would write with my students in the classroom as well. Yeah, so that's been something that has been, and also to see, right, usually I'd say, okay, you have 25 minutes, do this. And I would go through it myself and see, okay, right, what was it like? You know, and usually at the end of 25 minutes, I would ask them, would you like more time to write? And always it's like, yes. And then we negotiate a time. Okay, all right, how much more time do you need? Right? Yeah. And that's also another way to help me better understand them as well. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for your responses, Cheng. There's such a rich range of responses, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy them as well. So thank you very, very much for agreeing to talk with us today.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I've enjoyed the chance to think about my own practice and share that with you and your listeners.
For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.